Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time on the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it's Monday, April 1st, 2024. April Fool's Day, everybody. And it's Monday. You know, I try to accommodate my guests as much as possible. So we're basically, DJ Nate and I are recording these things all around the clock, ladies and gentlemen, all around the clock, every day of the week. We're very busy. Before I bring on my distinguished guests, I'll tell you something that's in the news today. I got to chuckle out of this one. This is from Crain Chicago Business. The headline popped up on my phone showing my distinguished guests how sophisticated I am. I have a phone. this headline cracked me up, man. This headline is about a story in Kansas City. Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes urge Kansas City to seal $2.5 billion stadium subsidy. So apparently the Bears are not the only ones with the big paw out looking for a handout from the taxpayers. Kansas City Chiefs want one too. They want $2.5 billion. The difference is that the Kansas City Chiefs are a successful football team, whereas my beloved Chicago Bears are mired in misery. And the Kansas City Chiefs have one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, a guy named Patrick Mahomes, who the Bears could have had, except, I don't know. There's no explanation still to this day. And by the way, colossal failure, I have to say, at sports writers in Chicago. Your inability to get to the bottom of why the Bears drafted Mitch Trubisky over Patrick Mahomes gnaws at me. My distinguished guest is waiting on deck. Always got at the bottom of every city news story. So you should make like him on this one. Anyway, the one benefit of not having Patrick Mahomes is that we don't have Patrick Mahomes going around promoting a handout for the Bears. So just think on the good side, ladies and gentlemen. You've been cheering Patrick Mahomes, and now here comes the pay up. Yeah, fork it over, big guys. We want money. $2 billion for a football stadium, for a team that's generating so much money. But, you know, that's how voters are, though. Their team won. They've got that glow in their eyes. Patrick Mahomes, he's asking me. I gotta give him the money. Patrick asked. The Bears, on the other hand, had a very popular quarterback named Justin Fields. And at the very moment when they could have used Justin Fields the most to bring in some money from the dummies of Chicago to finance their stadium, they trade him for a six-round draft choice. Oh, my beloved Bears, you are so clueless. And for once, it benefits me and my distinguished guest. All right, without further ado, I'm going to ask my distinguished guest to introduce himself, and then away we go. Distinguished guest?
Well, this is Gregory Royal Pratt with the controversial opinion that, you know, maybe the Bears would be worth giving some subsidy for if they were winning three Super Bowls out of the last five or whatever it is. So, you know, like, I mean, you know, we should be skeptical. I'm just saying, you know, you don't want to reward crapulence, but you don't want to, you know, throw away excellence.
Well, this is not where we're going, ladies and gentlemen. Ultimately, with this conversation, we'll be talking about Gregory's recently published book, which we've been promoting on this show since he told me he was writing it, about Lori Lightfoot. But before we get to that, I'll just say this. The whole point of giving a handout to a football team or sports team is to somehow or other encourage economic development in the city. If you move it away, if you think of it logically, Greg, if you think of it as something like as an investment, it's to invest in a team that is bringing back the money that you invested and more. And here in the city of Chicago, I can't say what they've done in Kansas City. They've never even attempted to have a legitimate, logical discussion supported by evidence. If you view the taxpayers of the city of Chicago as bankers, and you, Greg Pratt, were coming to us and saying, I could, if you would lend me the money to build my home, I will pay you back. And here's evidence. If you gave the amount of evidence to the bank that the Bears and the city of Chicago have given us to justify whether it warrants that loan, you would never, ever in a million years get the loan. Why? Because you would have given no evidence. You would have just said, hey, just read this article in the Sun Times. It says it's going to benefit. You know, you get someone from the Sun Times to write it up, Greg, and that's it. That, you get what I'm saying? So it's not really rewarding a team because it's good in the field. It's supposed to be rewarding a team. Or no, it's supposed to be investing in yourself, Greg. Do you follow what I just told you?
Well, I'm not advocating for it. I'm just saying it takes a certain amount of nerve to be crapulent and ask for money, and at least the Chiefs can point to something that is a worthwhile bit of civic pride. I do like some of what the Bears are doing, but we'll see.
All right, we'll leave that conversation coming back, because instinctively I felt myself going, what is it that the Bears are doing? Oh, you mean on the football field in terms of, got you. Okay. All right, we'll hold off on that conversation. This is not Moise Bawani I'm interviewing, who's the Ben Jarowski Show's expert on all things NFL. It is Gregory Royal Pratt. All right, the name of the book is City is Up for Grabs. And we've been talking about it, Greg, for a long time. So first of all, congratulations on seeing it in print. This week is the rollout. When can folks, let's just get this piece of business out of the way before we take the deep dive. When can people buy it? Where can they buy it? Just give all that information. Go.
Your local bookstore probably has it already. They'll have it all week. You know, I was surprised to learn that, you know, if you order from your bookstore, you'll get it early. You know, you'll get it as soon as they get it, which is early, and Amazon doesn't ship until the actual day of. Now, obviously, if you're a Prime member, you'll probably still get it pretty quickly. But there have been people getting it for weeks now, which is pretty impressive. So, you know, I encourage people to buy local. I encourage people to come out. I'll be at Pilsen Community Books on Tuesday, which I, you know, I'll be at City Lit in Logan Square on April 9th. There's a few different clubs, you know, that are going to have me. The Union League Club is going to have a luncheon on April 15th. I'm not sure that the Pitchfork Caring Progressives are Union League Club people, but that's okay. You know, that one's not free though. So, you know, I refer people to the bookstores, which is free, although come buy a book, support the bookstore. It's going to be a very fun few weeks.
Yeah, no, congratulations. Quite an accomplishment. I remember when you first told me that you were doing it, and you were on a very tight deadline. It's remarkable to think about this, ladies and gentlemen. Lori Lightfoot, she's only been out of government for, well, it's been less than a year, but it seems like an eternity, because so much happens all the time, obviously. There are three. I was up late last night reading the book, so I give two thumbs up to the book itself. So great job. I already said this on the mic, so I'm repeating myself because Greg sent me a couple chapters to read before. So really well done. I thought you were very fair to absolutely everyone involved, which is remarkable in this day and age with how I think the media covers City Hall. All right, I'm going to kind of break it down into three parts for our conversation today, Greg, and the parts that interest me the most, I suppose. Number one would be, the 2020 riots, unrest that followed George Floyd's murder here in the city of Chicago. And that's how the title emerged. The city is up for grabs. So one thing that came clear to me in reading your section on the 2020 disturbances is a sense I had at the time that there was no plan whatsoever to how the city was responding. And in part, I felt that, Greg, from the guests I had come on the show, and for instance, Troy LaRavier came on the show and talked about how there was he was part of a protest of people crossing the bridge trying to get to Trump Towers, and there was such a police presence outside of Trump Towers, and everybody got arrested, including Troy. I was like, why are there so many police at Trump Towers? Like the rest of the, you know, it had Raylo was talking about the 15th Ward or rioting there. Sue Garza was talking about the 10th Ward rioting there. Gregory Mitchell was talking about the 7th Ward rioting there. I mean, there was rioting all over, and there was this huge concentration of people at the Trump, of cops at the Trump Tower. So my sense was there was no rhyme or reason to this at all. What are your thoughts? Having done all this research and written the book, go ahead.
Well, there was no real plan. There was a lot of bluster. You know, Mayor Lightfoot really looked down on the mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Fry, who was kind of a dweeby looking guy. You know, he looks like a 25-year-old hipster, even though he's not a 25-year-old hipster. And I'm not trying to diss on 25-year-old hipsters, but it's a little dweeby as the mayor in a crisis. And he was kind of dweeby. He got booed out of he showed up to try to ingratiate himself with some protesters, and they booed him out, and he looked like a fool. Like, it was a very, very iconic little moment. And Lori did not look kindly upon him, and she thought of him as a bit of a dweeb, and she didn't like the way that they gave up the police station in Minneapolis, which got burnt down. And so she has a little meeting with her people, and she says, "They won't burn my city down." And that was about the end of the planning. You know, they had the police department believed, hey, you know, we handled NATO. There was no riots after Laquan. So we're all good. We'll just go out and do a lot of what we've always done. And very quickly, the situation got out of control, and they were very hesitant to do a lot of big things. You know, they were hesitant to bring out the National Guard. They were hesitant to raise the bridges because they thought we have it under control. Then they thought, well, we don't like the optics of it. And so the whole situation spiraled there, but there was no good planning around the preemptive. And then the reaction was just plain whack-a-mole all over the place. And I recount this a little in the book. I ended up driving around the entire South Side from east to west, from, you know, South Loop and Bronzeville all the way to Sue Garza's ward on the southeast side, to Beverly, to Hyde Park, just the whole South Side, literally the whole South Side, east to west, north to south. And, you know, the neighborhoods were being destroyed. You know, the looting was hitting the Black businesses the worst. And it was a really, really tough day. But that's all a long way to say they were not prepared. They did not have a plan. And then they fumbled the response.
I like to point out that whether he looks dweeby or whether he looks like a 20-something-year-old hipster, Jacob Frey of Minnesota did something that Lori Lightfoot of Chicago could not do, and that is get reelected. So I'd just like to point that out.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, it just felt compelled to point that out. And immediately I feel compelled to go on a tangent here, Greg, but on I will go. This compulsion that Lori Lightfoot had to prove that she was tough. And this is a theme in your book as well. There's a whole chapter on her showdown with the quote unquote Italians, which is still, it's still like my mind is boggled when I just think about our mayor in that war of bizarre words with other human beings. And throughout the book, there's her just like being nasty and foul mouth and cussing people out and making all sorts of references to the size of dicks and getting it up the butt and just really bizarre rhetoric. And then this feeling that I'm not going to be like Jacob Frey, I'm not going to lose my police station. Like there was anything she could have done in a million years to avoid what happened to that police station in Minnesota, Greg, other than surround it with police, which meant another section of the city would be vulnerable. So please discuss this aspect of Lori Lightfoot's personality, with the foul mouth part of Lori Lightfoot. Go ahead.
Did you ever watch Back to the Future?
The original Back to the Future?
One, two, and three.
One of the weirdest movies of all time, but yes, go ahead.
Well, just because it's weird doesn't mean it's not excellent, but, Marty McFly, the main character played by Michael J. Fox, cannot be called the chicken without doing something stupid. And the whole series, the whole three movies are about him being called chicken and doing something stupid in response to it. And eventually he learns the lesson and he does not do something stupid. Mayor Lightfoot was a little bit like Marty McFly, where if you called her chicken, if you challenged her on something like that, you could bait her pretty easily. And so she would just be constantly taking the bait and trying to prove that, I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm tough, I'm smart, I'm the toughest, the fairest, the smartest, the best looking, every single thing that you could possibly egg her on about. And you can see it, and I'm, having a little bit of fun with that, but you can see it after the first big clash at Grant Park. Maria Haddon texts her and says, "The Columbus statue needs to come down. Can we talk about making that happen?" And Lori knows that the statue needs to come down at this point. Even if you think Columbus is a great misunderstood hero who should be worshipped, you can't have the statue up anymore at that time because it's going to attract more conflict, big conflict. So she knows that. And at this time, she knows that. And she responds to Maria and she says, "Happy to have a discussion anytime, but I don't take kindly to demands." And it's like, oh, okay, well, thank you very much. And that was one of her issues, is the Marty McFly thing of we can't share a space. We have to be in a conflict. And, from the right, there's a little anecdote early on where right before she gets sworn in, she's at an anti-violence march with Ray Lopez, and she's angry that it's his ward and it's a church that is in his community. And she's angry that they have to stand on the church steps together. And she's telling people, she's trying to get him to move off the steps. And I get it, and you have a lot of listeners that probably wouldn't want to be standing next to Ray Lopez either. I understand that, but she's the mayor and he's the alderman and you're in his ward, and it's not going to kill you to stand there and say violence is bad together. So it's a really, That was one of her thing. I bet you didn't have, Back to the Future on your bingo card, but here we are.
And I will really do everything I can to avoid a discussion of how bizarre a movie Back to the Future is. Because if I go down that path, it's over, Greg. Wow. Everything you say triggers a response with me, Greg, that takes me further away from like this plan that I had, this outline I had to follow. But let's go with it. Raylo. Man, that guy is a walking triggering device of Lori Lightfoot. Alderman Raymond Lopez used to come on the show quite a bit. And then I just said, "Raylo, you're on Fox. You don't need to be on me. You're going on Fox." So I kind of cut the cord with him. But He was a great guest, funny, and you know, he could take a punch and give a punch, and he'd make fun of me for being too lefty, and I'd make fun of him for being too MAGA-like. But what was it about Raylo that got under Lori Lightfoot's skin so much?
You know, Raylo is very effective at needling. Ray Lopez is a really bright guy, and people don't understand that sometimes because they see the politics. And he's a very savvy operator in terms of getting attention and debating, you know. And so Lori, you know, there's this line of sometimes people feud not because they're different, but because they're similar. And you know, Ray is also a debater and a feisty guy, and he likes to poke and he holds things personal. And Lori is, Lori has that pettiness too. I mean, they both have a substantial level of pettiness that, you know, they hold grudges and they stay mad. They don't get mad. They stay mad, and they're working on that. And I'm not, you know, I understand that, you know, so they had that little bit of a beef. And then Lori felt that, you know, Lori felt that he would like record, some of the big aldermanic meetings. So she didn't trust him. And there's a little gem of a story in there where before the riots meetings and before some of those meetings, Ray goes up to meet with her one-on-one, and they lie to him and tell him that they make everybody check their phone at the desk. And they made him check his phone at the desk because they didn't trust him not to record his meeting with Lori Lightfoot. And, you know, that's I'm not sure I told him about it. Well, I am sure I told him about it. I'm not sure if he knew that they lied to him about that, because I called him up one day. I'm like, hey, by the way, I've got this little story that's going in my book that they told you that they checked to check your phone and that they make everyone do it. And he's like, that's not true. I'm like, no, that's not true. And I think he had a suspicion, but he figured it out. But that's Lori Lightfoot. And she just, you know, she thought she was better than him too, in terms of, you know, we're both, you know, on the politics, they're not super far apart. She's a lot closer to Raymond Lopez on public safety than she is Brandon Johnson. And you know, and neither one of them would want to admit that, but is they are closer to each other than they are to the current mayor. And she wouldn't want to admit that, but that's one of the reasons that they clash.
Oh man, now you're getting into a whole other thing. Like, campaigning is one thing, and in reality being something else. Again, so many things that you trigger in my brain, I could respond. I'm just going to say this about Raylo. You have a line in I think it's in the acknowledgement section. It's not in the main part of the book, where you're giving a shout out to Danny Mealopoulos, one of the great reporters in the city of Chicago, dear friend of this show, dear friend of mine, even though he's lost his mind and become a Bucks fan. Strange goings on. The kid grew up in the Chicago suburbs, but I go on a tangent there, Greg.
It's a Greek thing.
hey, you're free to root for whoever you want, Dad, but you're from Chicago. You're not from Milwaukee, okay? But he told you something that I thought was really true. He said, and I'm doing this from memory, don't underestimate aldermen. It's easy to underestimate them because they act so weird sometimes, you know, and go ahead. Yeah.
You know, the gist is you might look at some of them and say, well, this guy's goofy. This guy's this guy's that, you know, this guy drinks too much. This guy doesn't seem like they're very smart. This guy is pretentious. This guy is boring, whatever it is you might think about some of these people, but all 50 of them were smart enough to get themselves elected to the city's legislative body. And, yeah. You know, they're all, there are some, you know, there are probably a couple of aldermen I wouldn't trust to pick up my dog poop. There are, but, you know, for the most part, they're all intelligent people looking to serve their community in different ways. Now, obviously, some of them have other agendas. Some of them have, they're all coming from different places, right? But I have a lot of respect for them and where and how they got there, because they are smart enough to get there. And that is something that you should never underestimate or disrespect, because, you know, you might think, okay, this alderman shot himself in the hand twice, even though he's a gun safety instructor. And you know what? Things happen to all of us. You know, that alderman is a pretty hardworking guy. And so there's, as often is the case, Dan Mihalopoulos is right.
No, Danny. Well, he's not right about the Bucks, but he is right about that. I will say this. Do you think that tying the two together, that one of the mistakes Lori Lightfoot made was that she underestimated the aldermen?
She underestimated them and she disrespected them, you know, which are not quite the same thing. But I point out in the book, she met with Ivanka Trump before she had met with most of them. And so, you know, Ivanka Trump, you're going to see her once, maybe twice in your life. Okay, she's a president's daughter, and yeah, she's got some sort of so-called influence or whatever. But you know, she's not your friend, and she's never going to be your friend, because you're not going to run in the same circles. You have different politics. No matter what it is Ivanka Trump says when she goes to the socialite parties in New York City or whatever, and she's like, ha ha ha, you know, my dad is so terrible, and I'm the progressive, and I'm making that up, you know, but she does spend a lot of times around liberals in New York and in DC. And I'm sure that, you know, well, actually it's been reported that she and Jared Kushner would talk about their moderating influence or whatever. And that's great. You know, they go out and do that, but she's not a friend of Chicago. She's not a friend of Lori Lightfoot. The people who are her friends are the 50 aldermen and the state reps and the state senators and the governor, who are going to need to help her pass her agenda. And she didn't. Alderman Villegas asked her to, was her pick for floor leader. He told her, let's get breakfast with aldermen and their legislative partners. He's like, you don't have a huge amount of time during the day, but you always got to eat. So get a breakfast, get a lunch, and meet with someone once. Get a couple of them in the week and meet with people, which, by the way, is good advice. And especially for somebody who doesn't know these people. And she just didn't want to do that work.
Wow. She didn't want to do that work. I mean, she's a very hardworking person. Just, I don't think anybody's ever accused Lori Lightfoot of not being a hard worker. Did you phrase it the right way? Didn't want to do the work, or didn't want to lower herself to have to sit with aldermen.
She didn't want to do that work. I mean, I'm not taking away from her work ethic, but relationship building is a special type of work, and it is not work that she is good at doing. And that's just the bottom line on that. You know, the relationship building of Ben texts Gregory and says, you know, I liked your tweet, or Ben texts Gregory and says, you know, why are you in Mexico City watching a Lucha Libre? Don't you know it's all fake? And then I do the relationship building of coming over and picking you up by the waist and slamming you and saying, how fake is it now, Ben?
Okay, none of that is, just so you know, it's funny.
The first example was real. The second example was an exaggeration.
It's pretty funny, man. By the way, so we alluded, just longtime listeners know this. In the book, Greg alludes to one of the funniest moments in our show. We loved it. Dr. D, shout out. Dr. D, who was the producer of my show for the first, I forget how many years, moved on to bigger and better things. God bless him. But he loved the recording of Lori Lightfoot's exchange with Arelo. It was about the only good thing that came out of the summer of 2020, I would say, in the city of Chicago, was this secret recording of a meeting that was illegal, I might add. So whoever recorded it was not even the worst violator of the law, okay? It was an illegal meeting because it violated the Open Meetings Act. So she was having a meeting to confer with aldermen about the city's response to looting. This is, man, Dr. D, Dennis would play this all the time. Drop it on me. In fact, once we dropped it on Raylo when he came on the show, and it was fun. He has a sense of humor. Okay. And it's the one where, he goes, I have a question. And he goes, you're not answering my question. She goes, you're 100% full of shit. And I'd love the 100% part. Always gets me. Wait a minute. He said, not 80%, okay? And to which he says, I'm full of shit. Well, fuck you then. Whoa, whoa. Oh, my God, Dr. D. We play that all the time. Crack me up. And did they ever reconcile? I know at the end, Raylo, when she was her last meeting, he said, you made me a better alderman. I'm, come on, Raylo. But did they ever have any moment where peacefulness in their relationship?
I have not discussed that with either of them, really. But the short answer, probably not. I know he was respectful to her there in that little speech, and that's fine. And, you know, knowing Mayor Lightfoot the way I know her, I'm sure she just saw it as a self-aggrandizement moment for him. I'm sure that if they went and they grabbed the beer, they would probably enjoy talking crap about Mayor Johnson. But I don't think that that is something that is going to happen.
Mm. All right. So I'll go back to the point I kind of made briefly, where Lori Lightfoot, you were saying that Lori Lightfoot is actually on a criminal justice issues, probably closer, or policing issues, closer to Raylo than she is to Mayor Brandon Johnson, even though she didn't campaign that way. And I think the part of the book that has me smiling the most is the part where you refer to a First Tuesday appearance she made at the Hideout with Mick and I ran the show. And she told me exactly, I knew I was being bamboozled. It took a while to realize the depths of it, but she totally bamboozled me. I must confess, Greg, told me exactly what she knew I wanted to hear, not just me, but the whole audience. And then she didn't do any of it. So I'll ask you this. What do you think's going on in her brain when she has that moment where she's talking to Mick and me? Do you think she's thinking, oh, my God, not Mick. I'll leave Mick out of the sentence. This guy, Ben, is so easy to fool. Good God, this is easy. Or does she actually believe what she's saying while she's saying it?
That is such a good question, and it is a question that has bedeviled a lot of her advisors. You know, at this point, I would just know, you know, that one of the little things she has in common with like President Trump is that, you know, President Trump's former advisors, his chiefs of staff, I think all his chiefs of staff don't support his run for president. I think that he's got a bunch of national security advisors, a bunch of cabinet people. She had a falling out with a significant number of her people, including her first chief of staff. She had two of them. She had a chief falling out with her deputy mayor for public safety, Susan Lee. You know, she had falling outs with a lot of different people, her lawyer, who Mark Flossner, you know, and this whole group of thing, and a variety of people that I've interviewed for the book and talked to over the years who were in her circle never understand, you know, she would make promises in there. Like, is she lying or does she not understand it? And they're baffled by it because she would come out and say things. I remember, and this isn't in the book, but this was in a Tribune story. I went with her to the Southside Irish Parade in 2019, and she's in a bar with Mancow and Jerry Joyce and all these cops and firefighters. And this guy comes up, shakes her hand, and says, oh, thank you for being here. She says, I'm going to take care of you guys. And then she would say it. She once got in a feud with John Catanzara and said, you know, we're going to take better care of the officers than he does. And that's just shit talking. That's just bluster. That's just saying whatever it is that comes into your head. You know, like you and your wife are mad at each other. And she goes, well, Ben, you know, you have a stupid hat. And you're like, like, wow, you're just saying that to hurt me, you know, which is a real scene from your relationship, I'm sure. But
I'm sorry. Whenever
I like Greg to apologize. Pratt.
Is the author of the great line, which he said to me probably off the record, because most reporters always say everything's off the record, which is like reporters on a tangent here. You guys are such wimps. Just learn to say whatever you want to say. Don't be worried about it. Okay. But it was so good that I broke the rule. I mention it all the time, and it has to do with Jeanette Taylor, revelation. She came on the show several months ago and blasted Brandon Johnson. And I was talking to Greg about it, and he's the one who said, I've said this, he goes, well, Ben, it's one thing if your wife tells you you could lose a few pounds, and it's another thing if she goes on a podcast and says it. And I was just, whenever Greg starts talking about my relationships with my wife, it always is a source of funny, you know, the analogies that come out of this young man's mind.
And, you know, I'm just trying to put it in the terms that people understand. And
that is correct.
And your hat is lovely, by the way. Right? Your wife doesn't think so, but I think so.
Oh, my wife loves his hat. So anyway, finish your thought. Go ahead, Ert.
Well, it's just sometimes she just says things to what her, one of her former top aides used to say, that she's just trying to survive to the next moment. And so, you know, there are things like I remember, and I always, it's funny because she would get angry that she gets covered for some of the flamboyant stuff she would do, from some of the confrontational stuff. And she'd say, well, nobody had a problem when Rahm and Daly were like this. And first of all, yes, people did have a problem and people did write about it, but she explicitly campaigned on the promise that she wasn't going to be like that, which is part of the problem. You know, I've never heard, you know, I've watched a lot of Brandon Johnson press conferences, and he's a pretty conciliatory guy in terms of he's generally speaking, he is not the middle finger guy. You know, he has his strengths, he has his weakness, he has his flaws. He's not the middle finger guy. And I've never heard him say, I'm not going to be the middle finger guy. And he's not the middle finger guy, but he never made that promise. Lori made that promise. And so the way they describe it is she's just trying to survive. So is she lying? I'm not sure. But, you know, there are a lot of things that can sound very, very good as platitudes, but that don't exist in the real world. Like, you know, it's a beautiful expression of, we can hold police accountable and uplift them at the same time, which is okay, true enough. But nobody wants to hear that in reality and in practice.
I am now going to defend Lori Lightfoot. So get your response to this. So let me just really get my thoughts together here, because it's not always easy for me to defend the mayor in the city of Chicago. But I do believe there was a bizarre double standard regarding Lori Lightfoot. And it's really pronounced with Brandon Johnson. I'll put him aside. So Lori Lightfoot would go out of her way to do things to win over people. And then the people she was trying to win over still rejected her. So I'm thinking the police and the downtown business community popped to mind. So you said that in many ways she was more like Raylo than she was like Brandon Johnson when it comes to policing. There's a section of your book where you talk about how angry she was during the summer of 2020 at the young people who turned against the police, and how out of control they were, and how sympathetic she was to the police, and how unwarranted the violence against the police was, and how much sympathy she had for the police in terms of being outnumbered in many protests and being overwhelmed about what they had to face during that summer. And so she said things like this all the time. And yet when police officer or friends were shot, killed, the police disrespected her and they turned their backs to her. That's also in your book. And I'm like, what does she have to do to win over the police? I don't know what else a mayor can possibly do to win over people and still get spurned by them. And the same thing is true with the business community, which turned on her, even though, I mean, God, I could go on and on of how all her policies were mostly a continuation of Rahm and Daly, who they beloved. So help me here. What could she have done? I mean, she did so much for all these people and they still turn on her. Go ahead, Greg.
Well, you know, that's a complicated question. And there's people don't like to people don't like a bullshitter. People don't like when they're being bullshitted, right? And people felt that she had an authenticity question with law enforcement on that type of question. And part of that is, I remember, I remember I asked her about police being denied their days off, which was a big problem for a few years there under Mayor Lightfoot and Superintendent David Brown. And her answer was that it's not true and that they have plenty of time in their contract that they're given, which is true. They have a shitload of time if it's following the contract. However, that time can be canceled, and it is canceled. And it's like, you know, if somebody came on the show and talked about how teachers don't work hard because they have the summer off and they don't do anything, you'd sound like an ignoramus. And when you talk about how the officers, they have plenty of time off and they're whining, you know, they're killing themselves because they can't see their families and they're seeing some awful things and they're under this enormous stress. And that was a great moment of, you know, she could have come out and done the most law enforcement type of thing. She could come out and get endorsed by John Catanzaro and do like a double backflip with him. And it's not going to work for her because people felt that she was just saying what she needed to survive on that, those types of issues. So I'm not sure and in her heart, that's where she wants to be is the pro law enforcement side. And, but they don't accept her for some of that is those reasons. Now, you know, the cops are tough. I mean, I was in a room with Bill Daley in 2019 at the FOP. I was at the FOP headquarters with Bill Daley and the other white guys and Willie Wilson. And Paul Ballas was hanging out in the corner drinking a Budweiser. And Bill Daly's there, and they were booing the hell out of Bill Daly. The cops are tough. They don't, people talk about the House of Delegates as a tough room, and I'm sure that it is for the CTU. And the cops are a tough audience too, even for people that they're friendly with. And so they're always going to be tough. So they were tough on Lori Lightfoot, but then she would do things that were really separate from that. And on that note, you know, she brought in this she brought in David Brown, which was a very interesting choice. Not necessarily the wrong choice on superficially. He had been an assertive cop in Dallas with an interesting life story. Obviously, going back to day one, I had concerns of how does a guy go from Dallas to Chicago? Can he adjust to the culture and the size shift? And he had been retired for a couple years. And then he didn't bring anybody with him, which meant he had a small circle. So she brings in this outsider who nobody really thought did a good job. And that hurt her credibility, too. And then you had his first deputy at City Hall. They used to mock him as Gaddafi because Eric Carter is the guy's name. And he had a whole big plate of medals on his chest. I don't want to digress too much, but she was doing things that substantively and stylistically were going to damage that relationship to where they didn't think she was one of them. And she would probably tell you that some of that was racial, which I'm sure to some extent, racial and gender wise, I'm sure to some extent that's true, particularly with like some of the harder right elements of the FOP. But she was bungling some of that herself.
Yeah. Oh my God. What you're saying about cops are tough is so true. Cops are tough. I just never saw a policeman rebel at the polling place against me. They may be tough. There were a lot of policemen who chewed me on during the Daily years, Greg, when you were still a young scholar at in high school, Chicago Agricultural High School. They would cheer me on, give them hell. You know, I once sat down, I'm not making this up, and gave advice to members of the Chicago, the Fraternal Order of Police on TIFs and how it affects our pensions. I'm not kidding. I gave like a mini lecture at a restaurant. I'll never forget it. One more time? Could you go through that again? So I know cops are tough, but I never saw them rebel against Daly. I never saw them say, oh my God, I'm going to vote for Dorothy Brown because I'm so mad at Daly. Or I'm going to vote for, oh my God, even though I urged them to do so, Bobby Rush in 1999. Guys, vote for Bobby Rush. This would be huge. No, the Black Panthers. I mean, you weren't even born. God. Anyway, so yes, cops are tough, but they took it to a step further with Lori Lightfoot, in my humble opinion, and two steps further with Brandon Johnson. All right.
And on Mayor Johnson, and I don't want to digress too much, it's interesting. I'll talk to some conservative critics of Mayor Johnson on public safety, and obviously Mayor Johnson does not share he's a leftist on public safety, and that's fine. Not criticizing that or praising it. But he brought in a guy that everybody in CPD respects and mostly lets him do whatever he wants. You know, Mayor Johnson is not micromanaging the police department, and they're mad at him over public safety stuff. And it's like, well, I don't know. I mean, he brought in a guy everybody respects and lets him do his thing. And so I'm not sure, from a conservative alderman perspective, what else you would want from
him. Oh my God. Don't get me started. Eddie gave him a raise. Let's not forget that. Let's not forget that part of the equation. Oh my God. Do you know how many, Greg, this is way before your time, but Daley would stall on police contracts, contract after contract, 3 years. Johnson comes in, he gives him a raise. They still don't like him. So, you know, don't get me started. All right, let's go to the other side of the coin. We were talking about conservatives. Let's talk about lefties, my beloved Chicago Teachers Union. Do you think there's lots of great stuff in Greg's book about Lori Lightfoot's relationship with Stacey Davis Gates, Jesse Sharkey? God, she's got this thing about men who don't fit the stereotype of like a tough guy. You mentioned Jacob Fry of Minnesota. You mentioned Glenn Fry of the Eagles. Oh, I'm sorry, you didn't mention him. But you mentioned Jake Sharkey in the book as well. She had this thing about Sharkey, like he's a wimp. He's not tough. I'm tough. Like, damn, this is some weird stuff. But anyway, do you think there was ever a chance that she could have had a more accommodating relationship with the Chicago Teachers Union, given that they came out very strong against her in 2019 against Tony Preckwinkle? Go.
No. And I'll elaborate. First of all, you know, on the CTU are very tough, savvy political players. You know, they didn't support her, and they probably weren't going to get behind her. And that's not just because they're evil, malicious, anti-centrist, whatever. They don't share Mayor Lightfoot's politics. You know, the way Mayor Lightfoot talks about politics sounds like it jives with the CTU, but the actual practice of it, she's not that different than Rahm Emanuel on a lot of these issues. And so they were never going to get along. When you start to add in some of the personality stuff, like I note that, you know, she used to belittle Jesse Sharkey as weak and ineffective, and she would talk about how he's a hypocrite because his wife is rich, you know, and Jesse does come from Jesse married into a family of some wealth, which I think you'll talk about a little bit. And she's like, oh, he's got a Tesla. And so he got a Tesla from his rich wife. And it's like, why are you talking about his wife? You know, why are you getting personal? And she would belittle Stacey Davis Gates as being fake. You know, everything about her was fake and things of that sort. And so, no, for practical and for personal reasons, that just for political and for personal reasons, I mean, they weren't really on the same side. And then she just didn't, have that type of respect, the basic type of respect. And there's an anecdote in there where she calls Kim Fox and is complaining about all these other, all sorts of people. And Kim is thinking to herself, the state's attorney is thinking to herself, you just got here and you need to work with all of these people for 4 years. So you can think, you know, you've been at the, how many editors in chief have you had at the Chicago Reader?
Oh my God.
And you've thought some of them sucked and you've thought some of them were great. And I'm just going off. Maybe you didn't think any of them sucked, but some you have liked better than others. But you don't come in guns blazing as soon as they walk in, because it's just not the right way to handle yourself. And so that's all a few different little anecdotes that are in the book that speak to that issue.
Yeah, no, it's that's good reporting by Greg in there. And there's one section about me, and I'll let you guys read it. No sense to dwell on it in this show. But I'm glad you got you took that particular anecdote about me and Joanna Klonsky, who will be a guest tomorrow on our show. When you hear this, she will have been a guest already. And the title of the book, by the way, it's the Ben Jarofsky Show and the Greg Pratt book, City is Up for Grabs, is from a quote that Lori Lightfoot texted to Rosanna Rodriguez, Alderwoman Rosanna Rodriguez, who is, we just dropped today a recording with her. So it's like, my life has not changed in any way, Greg. You've moved on to bigger and better things, but here I am still talking to these same people. And Stacey will be on next week as well. So,
I'm surprised you don't want to talk about the little anecdote is that you are responsible for one of the little craziest moments in the book, which is
you, all right, let's talk about it. You know, I was trying to be modest, but why bother?
You make a suggestion. You are trying to bring Karen Lewis and Lori Lightfoot together to try to bridge the divide between the union and the mayor, and it kind of blows up in everyone's face because Lori.
Okay,
go ahead.
No, I got to say this. So in any family, there's a person who has to play the role. I've told this to Stacey Davis. I've told this to so many people. Sometimes you get old and you get wise, Greg, and you tell people things. Everybody's younger than you. This is going to happen to you, Greg. You're going to come a moment in your life as a reporter, if you stay here, if you don't go to Hollywood or whatever, and you're going to be the old guy in a room, and you'll have years of wisdom to offer the younger people who are more powerful than you've ever been, reached higher positions of power and importance than you've ever had, but you have years of experience. You're an elder, if you will. And so I tell people, I go, you know, in any family, there's someone who plays the role, the diplomat. You have warring factions. You have stubborn people. You have people who just can never, for whatever reason, say they're wrong. All right? They feel they're always right. So you have to figure out a way to get this person and that person to stop being such fools and come together at some point so you can have a peaceful Thanksgiving, right, Greg? That is just get me through this Thanksgiving dinner. That's all I ask, all right? We'll worry about the Friday afterwards after the Thanksgiving dinner. So here we had Lori Lightfoot in a war of words with Stacey Davis Gates coming out of the 2019 election. And I said, what you should do, I suggested this to Joanna, an old friend, Joanna Klonsky, known her parents forever. I said, what you should do is have Lori Lightfoot meet Karen Lewis. By this time, Karen was retired and she was convalescing from her brain surgery. She's a great person, one of my dear friends. Everybody loves Karen Lewis. She's just everybody but Rahm, that's a sign of his sickness that he couldn't get along with Karen Lewis. Because you can't get along with Karen Lewis, you're not a real human being, all right? You're a robot. Anyway, so I go, just have, and Joanna's like, that's a great idea. We'll set it up. And Karen invited, I'm leaving stuff out because let's get to the point. She invited Stacey. Greg, because that's what you do. You're meeting, it's not just meeting me. I'm retired. I want you to meet Stacey. I want Stacey to meet Lori. I want to bring you guys together so you can work together. Because Karen, she genuinely respected Lori Lightfoot, Greg. You know what I mean? But for a black woman to be elected mayor, Karen really respected that. And she wanted to bridge. She wanted to be the bridge. But Lori, just the presence of, well, you take it away. You had the back. You did all the interviews with all the people who were involved. Go ahead. Explain the scene in that hospital room where Lori Lightfoot, Stacey Davis Gates, and Karen Lewis were together. Go ahead.
Lori is upset that Stacey is there. So she shifts her seat so she doesn't have to look at Stacey. And so she has her out of view. And, they have a conversation with some pleasantries, and Karen tells Lori, you know, you can work with Stacey. And then afterwards, Karen tells Stacey, you're going to have to strike on her. And, you know, Lori comes out. She's MFing Stacy. She's angry. She tells everybody that she felt ambushed. You know, she was upset that she was there. And Karen Lewis says, I'm not meeting with any mayor without my political director. And so so it's this whole big mess of a situation. And it's really, you know, and I would love to hear Mayor Lightfoot's version of this particular story, you know, because from her version, you know, maybe Stacy was being rude, right? But that's one of those situations where, you know, if you're Mayor Lightfoot and you show up and Stacy is there, you shake her hand and you address Karen. You're there to see Karen. You're not there to talk to Stacy. That's fine. That's fair. But you shake your hand and you say a couple nice things and you move on, right? And moving the chair is just an amazing little moment. And it's just a, you know, of course, Karen Lewis, who was at that point sick, right? And she probably, she's wise not to meet with anybody alone in a situation like that. So I don't, it's a really remarkable little story, and it really shouldn't have been that mess. And it's all your fault.
It's all my, what was the word you used? It's all my, what did you say?
Fault?
Yeah, fault. Okay. I thought that's what you said. It's all my, blame it on the old hippie. I was never really a hippie. You know, people say, Ben, you're a hippie. All right. It's really well done part of the book, in my humble opinion. So one more reason I urge everybody to read the book. And we'll close with this, Greg. In your humble opinion, the biggest achievement of Lori Lightfoot's 4-year reign and the biggest blunder. Go ahead.
Man. So, you know, she should be very proud of herself for vaccine equity during the pandemic. They had a real uphill battle getting Black people to vaccinate because of a variety of stigmas and a variety of past abuses and a lack of mistrust with government. And they really put a priority on that I think is worthwhile. I think at her best, she did care about equity. She did care about these ideas. I think her execution of it was often bad and at odds with at odds with some of her centrist corporate lawyer thinking. But she had great intentions on a lot of that stuff, and especially on vaccine equity, which you might forget. There was discussion of, do we just give the vaccine to as many people as possible, and it doesn't matter what race, what background they have, or that it gets us closer to herd immunity and blah, 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 or do we go and try to persuade people who, if they get sick, are going to suffer worse than, demographically, you know, Black people in Chicago are poorer and they have worse health outcomes and they have less, all of these issues. And she said, no, we're going to make a fight to vaccinate them. And I think that's something that she can always hold high. Her handling of pandemic shutdowns was a lot more contentious, but that's, we can leave that for the book. And then as far as, you know, I think that the refusal to make a change from David Brown was probably her undoing, because as she went around the city and people say, I'm worried about crime, she didn't have anything to talk about that she had done in response to it. Everything was about, you know, it's not as bad as it seems or something else. But her actual low point, in my opinion, is with Anjanette Young, where they mishandled the case of Anjanette Young. They denied her the video of what had happened to her at the hands of a botched police raid and misconduct by officers. And then they, so they botched all that. And then Kim Fox, and, you know, I'm being generous with some of the stories, you know, because there's a million of them in the book, but Kim Fox puts out a statement when the Anjanette Young stuff is happening. And eventually they have a meeting about something else. And at the end, Kim Fox, Lori Lightfoot confronts Kim Fox about, you know, you didn't need to pile on, you shouldn't have said anything. And Kim says, I criticize the city. And Lori says, I am the city. And I think that's one of the low points, because she's fixated not on what happened to Ann Jeanette Young, but on how it's affecting her. And mm-hmm. I think that it's a pretty good metaphor for what went wrong, where it wasn't about we, it was about me. And that just recurred on a variety of different issues for Mayor Lightfoot.
I just want to show this to you, Greg, State Exhibit A. You can't see that. I kept this. So Greg has, a great anecdotes in the book. He had a personal confrontation of sorts with Mayor Lori Lightfoot on the Ann Jeanette Young matter, which we won't go into. Just read the book. He goes into detail on it. But the press release was released December 15, 2020. And I printed it out, and I've kept it to this day, Greg. And I guess I should just throw it out. But to me, it's like a lesson about public officials. And the lead in this press release is, and it's a quote. So it's like a quote coming directly from the mayor. Today, I became aware of an incident involving Ms. Ann Jeanette Young from February 2019 before I became mayor, and I saw a video today for the first time. I had no knowledge of either until today. I had a very emotional reaction to what was depicted on the video. I imagine that many people did, and goes on. The point is, that wasn't true. Greg goes into detail about all the untruths in what I just read, but this was a statement from the mayor's office. And I kind of keep this around, Greg, just as a reminder, you know what I'm saying? I'm just going to put it right here back on top of all the other paper on my desk. It's just astounding in many ways. Go ahead.
We're going to bury you in that hat, and we're going to bury you with that press release.
No, don't put the press. First of all, please don't put that press release. I've like several times had it in my hand, Greg, going, I'm going to throw this away now. I don't need this anymore. Lori Lightfoot's not the mayor. Oh, my Lord. So, yes, just let it go, ladies and gentlemen, when I leave this earth. Yeah, go ahead. What were we going to say?
I appreciate you having me, and I appreciate the discussion. You know, I tried to write a book to help people make sense of what happened so that some of it doesn't happen again, so that some of the best parts can be replicated. I wrote a book that, and I hope you'll agree with this, that is substantive, but also entertaining. And it talks about some of what happened. And I'm not shy about including some of the unsavory anecdotes and entertaining and crazy anecdotes. You know, there's at least a couple of references to butt stuff, you know, but you'll have to read the book for the butt stuff.
Okay. Read the book for the butt stuff. I'm surprised that's not on the jacket. Greg, thank you very much for taking time from your busy schedule to come on, and best of luck to you with your book. All right.
Thank you.
All right. That's the great Gregory Royal Pratt. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.